This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We're all over the Winnipeg Jets on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in the studio. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is, of course, IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to Ezzy. Good morning to Dave. Nice to see you, gentlemen, on this, the 8th day of June.
Good morning.
A little less than 2 weeks away from the NHL draft. Hopefully the Stanley Cup final will be finished by then, but it's, you know, a toss-up at this point. But nice to see you both on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, nice to see you, too. I love how Shawnee Assor brought in a massive bag of fortune cookies.
Yes. It is a, last week it was cornbread. This week it is a bizarre amount of fortune cookies. But I'll tell you, when we crack those babies open, I assume the winning lottery numbers are somewhere in there. Just a matter of which one of us is able to dig into the right fortune cookie.
I feel like I have no desire to eat a fortune cookie unless I just ate Chinese food.
Yeah.
Or Vietnamese. Like, I feel like I can't just randomly eat a fortune cookie. I probably will just because they're there and I'm fat.
But yeah. I mean, where else do you randomly get, like, I mean, I've never seen anyone, like, have a bag of fortune cookies in their drawer.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm a little bit worried about why Sean has that big bag of fortune cookies with him, but.
That's probably a conversation for after the show, maybe.
Open it up and find out. Yeah, have a cookie.
That's a little scary, I gotta tell you. I agree with you there.
Have you ever seen those fortune cookies that don't actually have the fortunes in them?
Yes, I never know if that's good luck or extra good luck.
That's weird. It's not really a fortune cookie. It's just a cookie.
I know, but it's a magical cookie.
And the problem is it's not even a very good cookie.
The fortune cookie in general.
The point is, you just want to get the fortune.
Yeah,
it's true. Because nobody's really saying, this is the best cookie I've ever had.
This bland-tasting piece of cardboard is fantastic.
Exactly.
And sometimes you get the double fortune, and then you don't know which one to believe or which one is more valid than the other.
These are truly first-world problems that we're discussing right now on the program. But let's get started by talking about the Winnipeg Jets, and specifically Jack Roslovic, who had a lot of sort of news and smoke around him earlier this week when it came out. Well, initially it came out from Aaron Portsline of The Athletic. He has covered the Columbus Blue Jackets for many years, previously with the Columbus Dispatch, and he's certainly in tune to what's going on with the Blue Jackets and with Columbus hockey in general, that being from where Jack Roslovic is, of course, from. Came out and said that Jack Roslovic was upset with his playing time this year with the Winnipeg Jets, upset with his role with the Winnipeg Jets, and that he had both, one, requested a trade from the Jets, or his agent on his behalf had requested a trade, and two, had changed agents from the gentleman that he'd used for the majority of his professional career to Claude Lemieux, who, of course, is Brendan Lemieux's father, and you remember Claude Lemieux as a player.
And also Jack Roslovic, Mike McIntyre of the Free Press, he's going to come on in about 25 minutes. He mentions that Jack Roslovic and Brendan Lemieux are good friends.
Exactly. Right? Very close friends, apparently. Right? So, Lemieux was traded, of course, to the Rangers earlier.
So connect the dots there, right?
Right, exactly. Between Claude Lemieux and Jack Roslovic. You're right, exactly. And then it came out, you know, shortly thereafter that the agent of Roslovic...
About an hour later.
The agent of Roslovic, who had been fired, actually came out and said, no, he did not demand a trade. He did not request a trade. What he did is there were a lot of discussions about his role and how he was unhappy with his role. So whether, choose to believe what you want to believe, in this instance, the agent seems like he would have a lot of validity in this instance. But whatever you have is you have an unhappy player in Jack Roslovic, who had been and everyone expected to be a core member of this Winnipeg Jets team going forward for the foreseeable future as a young guy still on his entry-level deal. We know how teams need those kinds of players. You heard his name maybe bandied about around the trade deadline, potentially as a return for Mark Stone if the Jets went down that road to try and get him out of Ottawa before he eventually went to Vegas. But what you have here, at least entering the 2019-20 season, is an unhappy player in Jack Roslovic, and the Jets have another sort of fire on their hands that they need to try and put out.
Right, and the unhappy player part is nothing new. During the season, we talked about that quite a bit, Drew, on the show, and how Jack Roslovic was being used, right? I mean, it was clear that Roslovic was struggling during the season, and nobody expected Roslovic to be playing, 7, 8, 9 minutes a night, right? And we talked about, how when Roslovic was on the power play and, he won NHL First Star of the Week, he had his first career hat trick. He was starting to turn his season around. He wasn't a big factor in the first round against the St. Louis Blues. He had a down year. This was a big year for Jack Roslovic, his second full year in the NHL. And many people, myself included, expected him to take that next step. Now, what the big news here is obviously that, you know, he requested a trade or supposedly requested a trade. And obviously, you know, his agent is now going to deny it because he's not going to just continue with this because it makes them both look bad, right? And it puts them in a position of weakness. Now, with Jack Roslovic with his new agent, not necessarily, you know, Kenneth Robinson, who's not involved in the situation anymore, guys.
That was Roslovic's former agent, right. Kenneth Robinson.
And it's one of those situations where what is the truth, right? I mean, there's two sides and then there's the truth, right? And I tend to believe that there probably was a request for a trade, even though Ken Robinson is denying it. If you put, you know, two and two together, you have an unhappy player, you have a guy that, you know, is entering the final year of his entry-level deal, and we know that the Jets were entertaining trades, as you mentioned. Jack Roslovic was potentially a guy that they would move if it meant, I mean, if you're going to acquire a guy like Mark Stone, I mean, maybe
you
do
move.
It's
going to cost you a guy,
right?
Like Jack Roslovic.
Right, you're
that's
not going to move
gonna
Kyle
cost.
Connor. I mean, that's your, you know, first-line left winger. So I was a little bit surprised, and Aaron Portsline, as you mentioned, he's a guy that we've had on the show going back to the Red River days. He's a very good journalist. So it, you know, it kind of is a little bit of the he said, she said, where you don't really know now if there was a trade requested. But the reality is, guys, the fact that the Jets are possibly going to lose some key forwards and potentially trade some key forwards, and, you know, you could figure out who those guys are. You know, they might lose a guy like a Brandon Tanev. So there is going to be opportunity for Jack Roslovic, and I just hope that he's able to put this behind him, because I don't think the Jets are going to trade him.
Well, I don't think they're going to trade him at this point in time. I agree with you there. Dave, does Jack Roslovic have right to be upset with how he was used by the Jets last year? I want your, is he justified? No, not, that's not the, to say, is he justified in demanding a trade, but is he justified in how he was used, being, you know, finding it to be a little bit curious?
Well, I mean, like, look, he's a young guy, and the expectation is that these guys all want ice time. They all want to be the guy that's relied upon. He was the guy for the Manitoba Moose who was the first line guy. He was one of the best players in the AHL for the 2016-17 season, 2017-18 when he played those 32 games with the Moose and then got called up to the Jets and hasn't really looked back. So he's a guy who is used to being relied upon. And he talked about it with, I think, Paul Friesen at the beginning of the season, talking about, and with Matthew Perreault, talking about that idea of time and needing to get more time on the ice.
The wall just fell down on us here in the studio. They're literally collapsing in on us as we're on air.
And shockingly, as he didn't even react. Yeah. I was like, I was watching this happen. I was like, okay, keep it together, Manuk. Don't lose it.
Keep your train of thought. Keep
don't
going.
Lose it. And I'm like,
okay, guys.
I thought Ezzy was going to die, but okay.
Are the fortune cookies okay?
But anyways, so, you know what, does he have a right to be upset? Well, look, you know, I think after getting the first star of the week and playing so well and then seeing his ice time reduced and seeing guys like Matt Hendricks playing ahead of him.
Mm-hmm. He was healthy scratched for Matt Hendricks game late in the year. I think that was getting in the Los Angeles game.
And to be honest with you, that really doesn't make a lot of sense simply because these are the games where you really want Roslovic to be playing. Like, the one thing about, and we talked about usage of Scheifele and Wheeler where they were used too much and maybe you didn't rely upon some of your other guys. The whole point was that you wanted to give those guys opportunity down the stretch so when the playoffs came along, they could be relied upon. And again, Jack Roslovic talked about it with, I think, Mike McIntyre, Paul Friesen, those guys, saying about how he was used to a certain amount of minutes in the AHL and mm-hmm. you're not going to get those same minutes. So here's a guy who was playing probably 22 minutes a game with the Manitoba Moose.
Right. I want to jump in here, Dave, because I agree with you. Towards the end of the season, Roslovic was on the fourth line, but you remember, guys, he was given a chance on the second line with Patrick Laine. Roslovic was on the Jets' second power play unit. Mm-hmm. Remember?
Yep.
So, I mean, it's, and Mike McIntyre points this out in the column. It's not like Paul Maurice didn't get, it's not like Roslovic was a healthy scratch and he was only on the fourth line the whole year.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Roslovic did play significant minutes. And you know what? I'm a big fan of his game. I do think Roslovic has a lot of skill. But when you look at this Jets team, they're one of the best offensive teams in the league. Obviously, you know, they would like to have gone farther in the playoffs. But you're talking about, you know, you've got Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine as your wingers on the second line, and then you've got Blake Wheeler and Kyle Connor on your top line. Like, you've got some really good elite, I would say, wingers on this team. And then you talk about the third line. We know that that was the TLC line. But even though I agree with what you're saying, Dave, I just think that when Roslovic was given the opportunity, he didn't necessarily take the bull by the horns. Like, yeah, he had some decent games. half of his goals, guys, this year came in one game.
The one thing I would say about Jack Roslovic is he's...
And a third. He scored 9 goals this year. Right. A third of those goals came in one game. So he...
He had 4 points against Anaheim in that game. Right. That was 8-2 and was 6-0.
I think he went 22 games without a point. So I'm just saying, like, I realize that I agree. Roslovic should be playing more. I don't think he should be buried as a fourth liner. I'm just saying that to say that Maurice didn't give him an opportunity on the power play or on, you know, the second line, I'm just saying that that would be false because he has been given that opportunity.
Well, the one thing I was just going to say is that Roslovic is not a goal scorer. Jack Roslovic hasn't been a big goal scorer. He wasn't a big goal scorer in the AHL. He's a passer, primarily. Yep. He's a facilitator.
He's a playmaker.
So he needs somebody to pass to.
That's right. So Jack Roslovic, I mean, he played center for the most part with the Moose. And so he's a guy who, again, is used to distributing the puck more than he is a shooter. And again, obviously, we saw in the game where he had 3 goals, he can score. I'm not saying he's incapable, but I'm saying that he's more of a pass first, trying to find that open guy, give them an opportunity. So you don't really rely upon Jack Roslovic, in my mind, for goal scoring right now. But, or really, I, I'm not saying that he can't put up 15, 20 goals in an NHL season. He probably can. But I'm just saying he's not going to be, you can't really talk about him in the Kyle Connor thing because Kyle Connor is a pure shooter. That is what Kyle Connor is. And so Jack Roslovic is your distributor and he's a facilitator. So to me, you know, are you going to look to him to get you 20, 30, 40 goals? No, but you're looking at him as your pass guy to get those guys like Laine. And that's really the goal is, you know, to transition him. So the only thing that I would say that would surprise me, and I get it, that we live in this instant gratification society where you have to have success and guys get rushed into roles they're not necessarily used to. But the whole idea of this quote draft and development team is that you're supposed to allow guys to develop. So I don't have a problem with Jack Roslovic playing on the fourth line, because you want to eventually give him that spot as maybe a second line center. But has he eclipsed Brian Little? No. But at the same time, you know, so the only thing is he's just got to have patience. And again,
here's my perspective on it. I mean, so Jets head coach Paul Maurice, like most NHL head coaches, prefers to have a veteran over a young player. Yeah, if you injected most NHL head coaches with truth serum, they would say a veteran is going to be more responsible. I can trust them more.
Yep.
You know, I'm more comfortable with a veteran player.
Sure.
I'm sure Maurice is the same way. Unfortunately, right now in the NHL, every team, especially every team that wants to have, that has big salaried players on their roster, needs to have young players playing at their entry level deals. Mm-hmm. You need it. Otherwise, the salary cap doesn't work.
Right.
So you have Roslovic, who needs to play. You have a coach, not that he doesn't necessarily trust Roslovic specifically, but he doesn't generally trust young players like most head coaches. And it, you know, the two things don't mix. So eventually it comes to a head because you got a guy like Roslovic, to your point, Dave, who's used to playing big minutes in college. He's used to playing big minutes at the AHL level. He now makes it to the NHL level and he's barely playing 9 minutes, 10 minutes a game. I mean, you can look back.
You say used to playing those big minutes at the AHL level, but what has he done at the NHL level to play 15 to 20 minutes?
You know what? You need to give him that opportunity earlier in the season so that maybe you trust him enough that you don't need to go out and trade a first round pick to acquire a guy like Kevin Hayes. Maybe if you give Jack Roslovic that opportunity earlier in the year, say between October and the trade deadline, for example, or, you know, time portion in there, you can build him up to be the player that you can rely on so that he can eventually supersede a guy like Brian Little in your lineup. I mean, I get it from the coach's perspective. You don't trust the guy. Your job is to win games, and your job is to win games in October, and your job is to win games in November. But sometimes you do need to put players into positions in those games so that they can develop, so that you don't always have to trade a first round pick.
And it'll probably happen this year. And ideally, I would like to see Roslovic with, you know, Matthew Perreault and maybe Mason Appleton on the wing. Like, you know, we know that Christian Vesalainen and Appleton are going to get a really good opportunity to make the team this year. But I think when you're talking about, you know, Jack Roslovic, I think what you're saying, I think you'll see that more this year. But all I'm saying is that when you look at all of the talent the Jets had, to expect Jack Roslovic to expect Jack Roslovic to be a staple of your top six, I think is foolish.
I don't know.
Anybody expect Roslovic to score 30 goals and 60 points and be on the second line? Who is he going to bump off of that second line, Drew?
I don't think that he was going to necessarily, you know, no, I don't think that anyone had that expectation.
To Dave's point, he's a guy that prefers to play center. He played a lot of center. He's not going to play center on this. Where does he fit in as your center? He's not going to be your second line center.
But I know I'm cherry picking games here, but I'm looking at his game logs. And so, you know, a game on March 3rd at Columbus, you know, his hometown team, 7 minutes of ice time. The game before that, at home against Nashville, 9 minutes of ice time. A game in Washington, 6 minutes and 45 seconds of ice time.
You're just repeating. We talked about this during the year. I mean, you don't have to tell me that. I know that. I think he should have been playing more. I'm just saying that. It's tough when you have a talented team like the Jets. Like, this isn't the Vancouver Canucks.
Right.
I mean, the Jets have better players ahead of Roslovic. All I'm saying is I don't necessarily know that what Roslovic has done at the NHL level has earned him anything.
It's earned him more than playing 5.5 minutes a game. To play a player like that,
you're not hearing me.
No, I am hearing you.
I agree with that. We talked about that during the year. You can go back and you can listen to the show. We all said he should be playing more.
But I understand.
But to be frustrated, even when he was given the time, and he was given the time, you're talking about games. I mean, he was on the second line. He played on the second power play unit. He didn't do anything.
I understand his frustration.
He wasn't good.
I'm not prepared to agree with that comment of yours. I appreciate that you can make it.
You went 22 games without 1 point.
I know. I think
I don't care if you're getting 2 minutes or 9 minutes or 10 minutes.
Where are you developing the player? How are you developing the player? How are you helping the player playing him 5 minutes a game? If you're playing him...
I'm with you on that point.
Okay.
I just said we talked about that. We all agreed. I think I was the one that brought that segment up, that I wanted to talk about Roslovic and how he wasn't playing a lot.
But I mean, I understand.
Regardless where Roslovic was playing last year, he was inconsistent.
Fine, he might have.
Look at his number. Like, no, I mean, he hasn't earned. I think he hasn't proven it at the NHL level yet.
How does it help his development?
No, I agree. He needs to play more.
Then he needs to play. Either he needs to play more at the NHL level, or he needs to play more at the AHL level. Because playing him 5 minutes a game at the NHL level is meaningless.
But I've been saying that for players, like, for example, Sami Niku.
Right.
Sami Niku is a perfect example. Like, to me, you either trust Sami Niku and you put him in the lineup because he's better than the guys who you're giving time to, who are ahead of him in terms of seniority. Or you put Sami Niku with the Moose and you allow him to play big minutes with the Manitoba Moose. You know, to have Sami Niku sitting there practicing with NHL players, I mean, it's my own personal opinion, but I just think from a developmental perspective, if Sami Niku would have been with the Moose this season, for the whole season, it was a lot better than playing, what did he play, how many games did he play for the Jets?
Not enough to make it feel as though it's a complete year for him.
And again, like I said, even when they had the opportunity to send him down, they didn't.
Right.
And to me, that was a mistake because you have these young players. You're talking about development. Well, let them develop where they're actually playing minutes and that matter.
When we come back, the Jets have reportedly re-engaged in contract discussions with Tyler Myers. We talk about whether we think that's a good idea or where we think it's going to go from there. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Certainly think in the coming weeks, I'll have conversations like that with my wife and see what's best. You know, would love to start conversations with Chev if they're open to it. And, you know, we'll see what we can get done.
That was from the final meeting with the media earlier this season. That's Jets defenseman Tyler Myers, at least Jets defenseman until July the 1st, although teams can start talking with him about a week or so before that. According to a report from TSN's Frank Saravelli, the Jets have, quote-unquote, started to re-engage in contract discussions with Tyler Myers. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we are live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and his team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
So, Drew, I cracked open one of the fortune cookies.
Yeah. You already got enough fortune in that the falling wall panel didn't decapitate you. Yeah.
And I feel fortunate enough that I have a, you know, a beautiful wife, beautiful daughter, another one on the way. And
get on
I'm
with
just
it.
Able to spend Saturdays with you fine gentlemen.
Yeah, get on with it.
You can't ride in all directions at one time.
Wow.
Profound.
What does that mean?
I think that's a Confucius quote.
Yeah.
It's a confusing quote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyways, welcome back to the program.
I didn't take philosophy in university.
That's probably a good thing there. That's probably a good thing there, Dr. Ginsburg. Talking about Tyler Myers, we want to hear from you. You can get in on the conversation on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Thomas Hartleb says the big issue is Paul Maurice needs to roll four lines to give players like Jack Roslovic development. He needs to give Roslovic the development that he needs and not tucker out your top lines by playoff time.
No, and I agree with that because, guys, look at who's in the Stanley Cup final and look how impactful those fourth lines are.
Huge.
Sean Corrali, Noel Achari, obviously we're going to get into that later.
Yeah. Oscar Sundqvist, Alex Steen.
Oh, it's when you can have Alex Steen on your fourth line Oscar Sundqvist, because you remember the first round series against the Jets, Sundqvist was on the second line.
Yeah, he was great for the Blues.
So you have to be able to roll four lines. So again, I think Paul Maurice did a good job with the Jets last year, but if I had one criticism for Paul Maurice, it might be that he wasn't using that fourth line enough. And, you know, Drew and I got into it a little bit last segment. Obviously, it was a healthy debate, but when you're talking...
I actually stabbed Ezzy during the commercial break. He's bleeding now.
With a pencil.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about, you know, Jack Roslovic, I think we all agree, everybody, any Jets fan will tell you that Roslovic didn't play a lot last year. All I'm saying is that I think Roslovic has to prove himself a little bit more before he gets that second power play time and, you know, before he can be either, you know, a third line center or a second line winger, because it remains to be seen if he's going to be a center or a winger. But I know you want to talk about Tyler Myers here, Drew, but when you're talking about Myers, we talked about Trouba is the big question mark. And I always said this, and you can go back to, you know, a month ago when we were talking about this, you know, Tanev, Sherratt, Myers, those are your big UFAs, pending UFAs. But when you're talking about Trouba, I always said if the Jets aren't going to bring back Trouba and Trouba's not going to be traded for a number one pairing right shot defenseman, I had no problem with bringing Tyler Myers back. I just don't know if the Jets can afford Myers.
Well, let's start with that. That's the point. I mean, It seems, you know, and we've said this before, that Trouba's not going to be here after the NHL draft. I mean, there's even more smoke than there have been in previous times. So let's assume for conversation's sake that Trouba's on his way out. Can the Jets afford to re-sign Tyler Myers even now that they're quote-unquote re-engaging with him? Is that something that is going to be sort of like what happened with Paul Stastny towards July 1st last year? Remember, the Jets were engaging with Stastny, and then they made the trade where they shipped out Armia and Mason, and people thought that meant they were going to get Stastny under contract long-term. Well, lo and behold, we know he went to Vegas. So do you think that this is really something that is realistically going to happen, or is this maybe the Jets, again, just circling back to see, hey, is there a hometown discount you're willing to take, quote-unquote hometown discount, and we'll see if we can maybe get that under our number, Dave.
Yeah, I think so. I think for sure that is. And again, to your point, Drew, without Jacob Trouba, there's some questions about your right side. But, you know, at the same time, you've got Dustin Bufflin, you've got Tucker Pullman, you've got Sammy Niku, you've got guys who are ready to jump in the role. Now, the question is, as we see with defense, you have to have a deep field, because you can't just simply say, okay, we've got three good right side defensemen, and you know, it's a little bit questionable as to what we have on the farm. So to me, that's what you have to be very cognizant of. And if you're going to lose Trouba and Myers, I'm not saying it's impossible to survive that, because, like, you, to your point, are you bringing someone in to replace those guys? Obviously, you have to do something, because you can't just simply rely on Niku and Pullman to be the only players there. You're going to need some depth. You know, additional depth.
Aren't you more interested in signing a guy to a 1-year deal who can maybe be a stopgap? Well, and if Pullman and Niku end up, superseding that guy, whomever he is in the lineup, you're more comfortable with that.
And that's the point, Dave, right? And I think you were going to get to this, right? If you're giving Myers, like, what is Myers getting here? $5 million?
Well, according to the Evolving Wild contract projections, and we've been using that sort of throughout the month as we
look
at it.
They're usually pretty bang on.
You know, they're pretty close. I mean, they predict that Myers is going to get 7 years and $6.2 million per season.
Okay, like, that's high. Like,
no, you can't afford that.
$6.2 million, okay? If you're giving Myers $6.2 million, he's got to be your second pairing guy.
He's got to be a top pairing guy at $6.2 million.
Or, like, ideally, but like I would assume if that Buff would be your top pairing guy.
Well,
right? So I'm assuming that, okay, the Jets trade Trouba, whoever they trade him for. Buff moves up. So
you don't want $14 million wrapped up in Tyler Myers and Dustin Byfuglien on the right side of your defense.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Because I kind of thought about it. We were talking about it about a month ago, and I kind of thought about it a little bit more after the show. And I was thinking, like, could the Jets go into next year with your right side being Dustin Byfuglien, Tucker Poolman, Sammy Nikku? Right? And I kind of thought about it more. And I mean, we know that Nikku is ready for the NHL. We know that Tucker Poolman is definitely at 25 years old ready for the NHL. And I'm not saying that that would be their best right side, but I kind of thought more and more about it. And, you know, you would have a very young right side, right? Because Nikku and Poolman are both, you know, 22 to 25, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about Myers, I agree with Dave. I don't think you can lose both of those guys. And what I'm saying is, like, you could lose them, but you'd have to replace them with another veteran right side defenseman.
A one-year deal.
Right. So either you're trading Trouba for a right side defenseman, or, like you said, you're signing a guy. I don't think the Jets are going to go after, like, a big name. I don't even think there are very many big name right shot defensemen that you can bring in. But the point is, I think the only way.
They're not going to trade for Nikita Zaitsev who's got 5 years left on his contract at $4 million a season.
And I know Canucks fans aren't loving the fact that the Canucks seem to be in on Zaitsev, but when you're talking about Myers, I think the only way he comes back is if they get a number. I think six is too high. I mean, I would be a lot more comfortable around $5 million, maybe $4.5 million. Obviously, I'm not a player agent, so I'm not going to pretend, but $6 million to me, all due respect to Tyler Myers, that just seems like a little bit high for what he can bring. Like, to me, he's a really solid second pairing guy, but ideally on the Jets, he's probably a third pairing guy. But when you're talking about, you know, some of the other names out there, I mean, Chevy's in a really tough spot. He really has to figure out what he's doing on that right side, because the left side obviously is a lot more solid there, but you also have it's not as solid on the right side, but you have at least guys that are already there, right? Yeah. Like you've got Kulikov, Sherrod you can bring back. What I mean is the right side is obviously stronger, but when you take Trouba and Myers out of the equation, it's still strong, but it's not as strong. I guess that's my point. So,
You bring in a right-handed guy on a one-year deal, and you say, you know, play a few games, make sure that you have some backup for Poolman and Nikku.
Right.
You can't. I mean, maybe if Myers gives you a discount like $4 million a season, you really start to consider.
But let's be realistic.
Nobody's leaving $3 million a season on the table.
Let's be realistic. Tyler Myers knows he's 29 years old.
It's the last.
This
big contract.
This is his last big contract. He's signing it, and I'm not saying he's using the Jets as leverage, but the fact of the matter is that. It doesn't hurt him with other teams to think that the Jets are trying to get him.
Yeah.
And now other teams are going to be, you know, galvanized. Right. I just don't think.
Increases the value a little bit.
Of course. And I think Tyler Myers is, to be honest with you, I think Tyler Myers is done as a Jet. I think he'll be signing a big contract with someone else. And I think from a Jets fan's perspective, you're probably okay with that, because you've got cost certainty with guys like Sammy Nikku, Tucker Poolman, and that money can be spent better on other players.
Well, and the other point, sorry, Dave, I know we got to go to break here, Drew, but when you're talking about if you bring back Myers, even if Trouba isn't back next year, then you have a situation where either Sammy Nikku or Tucker Poolman is going to be your seventh defenseman,
and you got
to get those guys ice time. So I think we are looking at a situation where there's the good chance that your right side next year is Buff, Nikku, and Poolman.
And if they bring in a UFA on a one-year deal, sure. And if he ends up being the seventh guy who sits in the box all season long, so be it. When we come back, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Quick CFL note for you on this Saturday morning. As most well-run organizations do, the Montreal Canadiens have fired their
Canadiens?
Head. Pardon me, the Montreal Alouettes.
Careful, Drew.
Thank you, Dave. The Montreal Alouettes have fired their head coach, Mike Sherman, on the eve of the start of the CFL season. Kahari Jones, former Winnipeg Blue Bombers quarterback, legendary Winnipeg Blue Bombers quarterback, is now the interim head coach in Montreal. So if you're betting on one team to finish at the bottom of the CFL this season, I would vote for the team that is currently owned by the league and just fired their head coach as where you should put your money.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, we're pleased to welcome to our program our good friend Mike McIntyre. Mike, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
I'm pumped to talk Raptors with Mike.
I'm actually heading back to Toronto, believe it or not, for Game 5. So maybe a chance to see some history go down on Monday night.
Mike, do you need an assistant? Because I'm happy to provide it.
Dave's willing to carry your bags for you, Mike. Game 5, of course, between the Raptors and the Warriors, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290 on Monday night. So there's the cheap plug. I'm a company man, nothing else, Mike. Obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, and you know, news broke earlier this week that there was yet another member of the unhappy club in the Winnipeg Jets locker room. That is Jack Roslovic, who allegedly asked for a trade or didn't ask for a trade. It's not really relevant. The point is, he was unhappy last season. By the end of the year, Mike, was there anybody happy in that Jets dressing room?
No, it appears there was not, and I think we all got a sense of that, right, on the garbage bag day. I mean, you could just tell taking the temperature of the room that day, it was not a happy bunch, and I think a big part of that, of course, losing tends to breed unhappiness, and the Jets did more than their share of losing down the stretch. They were basically a 500 hockey team from pretty much the All-Star break on, and of course, they ultimately came up short to what may be the eventual Stanley Cup champions in St. Louis, which you have to wonder if that does put a bit of a different light on that first round loss. I'm not sure that it does. I think some fans, though, will probably maybe say it takes the sting away a bit, knowing that you took the Stanley Cup champs to 6 games. And of course, in that swing game, the 5th game, the Jets had them on the ropes. They were up 2-0 in the third period. They squandered that lead, and the rest, as they say, is history. But yeah, I mean, it's clear this was not a group that was having a lot of fun. I think, I'd previously written the fact that none of these players accepted invites to even go play in the Worlds. That kind of tells you right there that these guys were fed up with seeing each other. They were fed up with being at the rink. And they all needed a breather, and you hope that they can come back in the fall, of course, with maybe a bit of a different attitude and a fresh set of eyes and a bit of a hunger that seemed to have disappeared as the season went on.
You know, Mike, just sticking with Roslovic, and of course, I read your column yesterday, like I read every single one of your columns. And when you, I know you're the man. And when you
and my mom,
I'm right up there in the Mike McIntyre fan club. But you wrote this, and these were your words. Like you said that even though Roslovic is frustrated, he's not blameless, he didn't exactly light it up in his reduced role, and we were talking about that in the first segment, and even though I think we all understand Roslovic's frustration with having less ice time, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, whatever it was, a night, doesn't Roslovic really have to prove it next year that he deserves a bigger role on the stacked Jets roster?
He certainly does. I mean, nothing is going to get handed to him on a platter here, and just like Kyle Connor, I mean, Kyle Connor was put in a pretty plum role, but guys, he absolutely excelled in that role. Jack Roslovic maybe has not got the same opportunities as his fellow 2015 first round draft pick, but I think at one point, a lot of people viewed Connor and Roslovic on a very similar sort of career arc. They both were playing college. They were chosen, as I mentioned, in very close proximity to each other. Well, look at them now. Kyle Connor is probably going to cash in on a massive contract this summer. Jack Roslovic is in his final year of his entry-level deal, but he's not exactly in a position to translate that into a big-money deal next summer. Some of that, a good chunk of that blame has to fall on Jack Roslovic. He can have whoever he wants representing him, whether it's Ken Robinson, who he fired this week, his longtime friend and agent from his hometown of Columbus, or Claude Lemieux, his good buddy Brendan's father, who's now representing him. At the end of the day, though, I'm not sure what an agent can do. I know Ken Robinson, and speaking with him, in fact, throughout the season, had some conversations with Kevin Cheveldayoff, not to demand more ice time or a different role, but just to find out, get a bit of a sense of what was going on and how maybe Jack Roslovic could improve his standing. Your agent is not going to get you goals and assists and points. That's up to you. And sure, Jack Roslovic showed flashes. I mean, the highlight of his season for sure would be that game against Anaheim back on February 2nd, his hat trick all on the power play that night. Nikolaj Ehlers, of course, was still out of the lineup, and Roslovic had been moved up and at times was making the most of that opportunity, but he wasn't consistent the way he needed to be. And as the Jets got healthy, and then as they made some additions at the trade deadline, his role, of course, was greatly reduced. He was a fourth liner, often, you know, not cracking 10 minutes a night. But there were times, guys, he was completely invisible. And that's on him. That's not on his agent. That's not on Paul Maurice or Kevin Cheveldayoff. That's on him. And, you know, ultimately, his play is going to speak the loudest, a lot louder than any agent can speak for him in terms of what his future holds.
You know, Mike, if you look at the TSN hockey free agent frenzy list, Tyler Myers is number 7. But according to reports earlier this week from TSN, they said that the Jets were re-engaging with Tyler Myers. What did you take from that?
Well, to me, it's almost a Hail Mary at this point, because Tyler Myers, I think, if he's going to re-engage with the Jets and ultimately agree to something, I got to think he'd be leaving a ton of money on the table. You know, this little exercise I did in the Free Press in my column today, where I kind of mapped out how I see things shaping out this summer. I'll tell you what, guys, it was hard to do with that salary cap and, you know, trying to prognosticate what Line A and Connor and Andrew Kopp. I don't think we even talk about Andrew Kopp a lot. He's due, I would think, for a significant raise. He only made $1 million last year. He was certainly more effective than $1 million player when you look at value. So trying to figure out what these guys are going to be paid and what that leaves, I do not see how Tyler Myers, even if they move Jacob Trouba, unless all they get back for Trouba is picks and prospects, if they're not taking back a decent salary, then okay, maybe there is room for Tyler Myers. But if the Jets are getting back a player who has a cap hit, and I use the number 4.1 million because I identified a couple defensemen that I think might be on the radar for Jacob Trouba, I have no idea where you're getting money for Tyler Myers. And guys, that's with moving Dmitry Kulikov and Matthew Perreault, which I suggest the Jets look at doing this summer, which would open up some $8+ million of cap. There's still not room for Tyler Myers or Brandon Tanev. So I don't know where this money is magically coming from. And you got to think, and you just identified it, the fact that Myers is so high on that trade or the free agent board shows the lack of defensemen that are available this summer. And that's ultimately going to drive Tyler Myers' price up, a price that I don't think the Jets can come anywhere close to matching.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. And Mike, we certainly know the amount of work that Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to have to do this offseason. It's a difficult job that he's got in store for him. But what about Paul Maurice? You have a locker room that, you know, he admitted that there's a lot of ruffled feathers. So, you know, what happens if come October or, you know, November, you know, time hasn't healed all wounds with this Jets team? Huh. You know, what then?
Yeah, I mean, let's say the Jets get off to a terrible start. Let's say that the way they were playing down the stretch essentially carries over into the first couple months of the season. What if this is a 500 team, and we know on paper, and certainly with the Jets spending pretty much to the cap, there are expectations, again, that they're going to be much more than just a 500 hockey team. So you're right, how much falls on the coach? And, you know, Paul Maurice is the second most tenured head coach in the NHL. Kind of hard to believe, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It just shows the rate of turnover with bench bosses in this league.
Yeah, rent don't buy.
You're right, and you know the old saying: you can't change 20 players. You change the coach, and if there's already signs, right, that there's sort of trouble in the Naked City here, and if they don't get off to a strong start, you do wonder how long that rope is, and if the decision is made that we really need to change the culture or the mix here, it would be a heck of a lot easier to do that by removing the head coach than it would be to remove a bunch of players, because I still expect, you know, the majority of the core that has been with this team now for a few seasons is going to be back. And if the problems persist, well, what do you do? You can't just automatically change that core overnight. You certainly can change the coach. And I think when you're a cap team, guys, and there's a belief that there's a certain window of opportunity, and you've already maybe frittered away a couple of those opportunities, especially this last season, I think the leash is already getting very short, and no doubt it would get even shorter in quick order.
Mike, we've been talking a lot about, you know, Jack Roslovic and Jacob Trouba, Patrick Laine. They were making the headlines over the last week, but do you think enough attention has been paid to the sneaky good moves that Kevin Cheveldayoff has been making? And obviously, you know, the big one is trading the rights to Kevin Hayes to the Philadelphia Flyers, getting a fifth round pick. And we know what the Jets have done with fifth round picks, right? Mason Appleton, was he not a fifth? He was a close enough, right? Tucker Pullman was a fifth round pick, right? Connor Hellebuck. So, I mean, we know that the Jets' track record of getting those gems in the fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, Sammy Niku was a seventh rounder. But the point I'm trying to make is, do you think Cheveldayoff is getting enough credit for some of these smaller moves that he's been making, you know, signing a Seth Griffith, signing a Logan Shaw, a J.C. LaPond? Because to me, it looks like the Jets are doing an excellent job of making sure that those productive players for the Moose are coming back next year.
Yeah, they're trying to obviously maintain a winning culture and a positive culture, especially when it comes to their depth forward. Look, and Dave would know this more than anybody. He covered the team more extensively than anybody in this town. But the Moose had a really good thing going. Unlike the Jets and the culture that seemed to exist down the stretch, I would suggest the Moose were the polar opposite. That was a team that was having a ton of fun, and they were building something really good there in their play down the stretch, ultimately coming, you know, just painfully short of making the playoffs. But my goodness, their play in the last few months and the way Coach Pascal Vincent had them playing, that's an environment you want your young players, your Mason Appletons, your Christian Vesalainens, your Tucker Pullmans to be in. And so it is positive to see that they've now brought some of those important pieces like Shaw, like Griffith back into the fold, like J.C. LaPond, who's clearly one of the leaders on that team and an alternate captain the last 3 years. So for sure, those are moves that are impressive. And I think getting something for nothing in the draft pick that you get back from Hayes, I'll stop short of praising Cheveldayoff too much because on that move, because I don't think the Hayes trade worked out anywhere near the way that everybody maybe imagined. The Jets paid a very steep price, regardless of what you think of Brandon Lemieux, and I know there's fans that love him, fans that hate him. He still brings something to a team that maybe the Jets don't really have, and maybe they kind of missed a bit once he was gone. And the 20th overall draft pick that went with it, the first rounder, is probably going to give the New York Rangers a very nice prospect. This looks to be a fairly deep draft this year, and so they're probably getting a nice pick. But yeah, getting at least salvaging something out of that with the fifth rounder is certainly a positive. And who knows with that lottery ticket what the Jets could turn that into? Likely, of course, it's not something that we'll see pay off anywhere anytime soon. But it's always nice, especially in a situation like the Jets are in, where they only had three picks going into this draft. Now they have four. And as I sort of outlined today, I think there's ways that they could add a few more picks between now and 2 weeks from now in Vancouver. And I think that has to be a priority because they want to make sure that those shelves are continuing to be stocked.
Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. He's on his way to Toronto for Game 5 between the Raptors and the Warriors, so you can read about that all in the broadsheets of the Free Press. Mike, appreciate your time. Travel safe. We'll speak to you again soon.
I'll send my regards on your behalf to Drake, guys.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. When we come back, we discuss the Hayes trade to Philadelphia and some of the Jets signings of guys to two-way contracts. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously an unrestricted free agent. And I don't know where I'm going. I'm sure my agent will talk to Chevy and have a conversation. But at this point, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm going to sit back and figure it all out.
Well, I think it's pretty clear now that we know where Kevin Hayes won't be signing. That's here in Winnipeg. Looks likely, you know, maybe not likely, but certainly the Philadelphia Flyers have gained themselves a leg up in the negotiations for Kevin Hayes.
Hayes can still sign with the Jets if the Flyers don't sign him.
It's true, but what would percentage chance would you put on that?
That would be amazing if the Jets got a fifth round pick and then signed Hayes.
I think there's about a less than 1% chance of that occurring.
From what I was reading,
there's about as much of a chance that I'm going to go on a 5 kilometer run today.
Or walk.
Yeah. Or even...
Or drive.
Or do any form of exercise.
Even tricycle ride, I would suggest. You can't pull that off.
From what I was reading, I think the Flyers have been successful in this maneuver before. I think three of four times they've made an early trade to...
Kimmo Tiiminen?
Yeah. And they had...
from Nashville? Is that what... Yeah.
And they had... Okay. What's his name? Didn't... Hartnell was one. And I don't remember the third one that they were successful in. But from what I was reading from the Flyers, guys...
Generally speaking, let's be honest.
They've been successful.
If you make this move, you've already sort of, you know, back-channeled a negotiation.
Well, remember, Vigneault was his coach in New York.
Right. And you've back-channeled a negotiation with his agent. You have the broad parameters of what he's looking for.
Yep.
I mean, I suspect it'll get done for the Flyers. And from the Jets' perspective, they knew they weren't going to be able to re-sign him.
No, it's good. You don't like the trade initially because you gave up the first. You gave up Lemieux and a conditional fourth, which obviously they didn't have to give up because they didn't win the Stanley Cup. But the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, to be able to recoup something, and as Eddie talked about with Mike McIntyre, there's a number of players that the Jets have been able to draft in the fifth round that have been good players. You know, another player we didn't mention was CJ Cease. So there are players, but to the point Mike made, that's not a player who's going to have an impact on your roster this season.
And if that player ever has an impact on your roster, it would be a surprise because he's a fifth round pick, and you know the odds of getting a fifth round pick up to the NHL level.
Well, again, Connor Hellebuyck is having a pretty significant. Tucker Poolman.
But those are exceptions more than the.
Look, the Jets have had what now? This is eight drafts. They've had eight fifth round picks. Yeah. In theory, I don't know if they've had an extra one or not. But the fact is,
they've had a great success rate.
Well, not great, but they've hit with three of them.
Well, that's a great success rate. When you're talking about fifth round picks, that's a great success rate.
If you draft a player who has a significant NHL career, then that's going to turn out to be a great trade because instead of losing Brendan Lemieux in a first round pick, you got a roster player back.
Right.
So basically, if you want to look at it like this, you've
given yourself another chance.
Sure.
Is what you've done.
I got to say, I like that trade for both teams because you look at the Flyers, and if they do sign Hayes, and all indications are the Flyers are going to sign Hayes, then your top centers are Claude Giroux. And then you've got Kevin Hayes as your second line center, and then now Nolan Patrick can be your third line center. Sorry, pardon me. Not Claude Giroux.
Sean Couturier. I was trying to figure out what you were talking about.
Sean Couturier is your number one center.
Because
Giroux used to play center.
Yeah, but he's on the wing.
He moved to the wing. So you've got Sean Couturier, Kevin Hayes, and Nolan Patrick.
And from Nolan Patrick.
That's right up there with any team as far as center depth.
From Nolan Patrick's perspective, this is a guy who hasn't, second overall pick, hasn't really materialized into a terrific NHL player.
He's only 21 years old.
Only 21, but now he gets to play easier minutes against lesser competition. Yeah. You like the move from the Flyers' perspective.
The Flyers are a team on the up and up, and I think they're going to be very interesting to watch because they do have the extra pick in the first round.
They're also a team that has been rumored to be interested maybe in acquiring Jacob Trouba. They have a surplus of defensemen on the back end. You've heard the name Shane Goss despair if he's potentially on the market as he sort of had a down year. Ivan Provorov, of course, of the formerly of the Brandon Wheat Kings.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to trade Provorov.
I don't think they are either. But he did.
Goss despair. I could see them trading.
He did have a down year as well, Provorov, after he had that great rookie year. Last year was a bit of a gong show in Philadelphia. So I mean, Alain Vigneault knows what he's doing. I mean, Chuck Fletcher, for all of the lack of, let's say, playoff success in his time in Minnesota, had the Minnesota Wild as a perennial playoff team, and that's what the Flyers certainly want to evolve back into, and then more.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Flyers are back in the playoffs last year. They weren't exactly a bottom feeder in the league. I mean, the Flyers had their problems.
Well, goaltending. Until Carter Hart came in and then really solidified the position.
Right, and you just named some of the, Travis Konecny's a guy that I really like too. I mean, the Flyers, Carter Hart obviously, is their goalie of the future, their goalie now. So I do think that the Flyers are going to be more active. I'm really going to be curious to see what Chuck Fletcher does, leading up to the draft and during the draft, because I do think that he is going to be active.
Two other quick notes for the Moose more than the Jets. They re-signed pending UFA Seth Griffith to a one-year, two-way contract. He's going to make $300,000 at the AHL level. They also did the same with JC LaPon, one-year, two-way. He'll make $275,000 at the AHL level. Dave, you saw these guys more than anyone else.
Yeah, no, and they're both good additions. Griffith was your points leader. LaPon, until he had a shoulder injury at the beginning of April, was a heart and soul guy for the Moose. He's a leader on and off the ice. They could have obviously used him in that final stretch to try and make the playoffs. So good. And he loves it here in Winnipeg. And, he at the exit meetings, he was telling us that Winnipeg is basically his second home, close to his home, obviously, in Regina. Mm-hmm. And he's the type of guy that you need on this team. It's the one thing with the Moose. You needed to solidify, make sure you had those veteran players, because we talk about it a lot, but the whole point of of a developmental league is having those veterans playing with the prospects to have that winning culture on your team.
Absolutely. The Team Snap Hockey Coaches Conference attracts hundreds of coaches from all levels across North America and Europe to learn about the latest coaching trends, strategies, and technologies. It's coming up later this month in Toronto. When we come back, one of the panelists, one of the featured presenters, is Sweden's men's national team head coach, Rickard Granberg. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN. SN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us in studio. If you prefer to do so via text message, you can do that. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The 2019 Team Snap Hockey Coaches Conference will attract hundreds of coaches of all levels from across North America and Europe to learn about the latest coaching trends, strategies, and technology. That's coming up later this month in Toronto. One of the featured presenters at that conference is the head coach of Sweden's men's national team. His name is Rickard Granberg. He joins us on the line right now. Rickard, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Well, good afternoon here in Sweden.
There you go. Good morning here in Winnipeg. Good afternoon in Sweden, Rickard. We appreciate your time this morning. You know, Rickard, obviously, you know, it's you're coming into the speak at this conference, and you come from a bit of an interesting perspective. Now the head coach in Switzerland, the head coach, of course, of the Swedish men's national team program. But you spent the first number of your coaching career coaching in North America in some places like Wisconsin, in Montana, if I'm not mistaken, and in Texas. Maybe for our audience that isn't 100% familiar with your pedigree, can you tell us about your coaching path and your coaching career so far?
Yeah, no, it's pretty interesting because I was invited back to the Swedish Ice Hockey Federation after being coaching in junior A's and college level in the U.S. and as well as CHL, Canadian Hockey League, in Spokane Chiefs. I was invited back to come back to work with Swedish coaches and also coach a couple of national teams here. So, you know, for those guys to invite me back to Sweden was a chance for those guys to get a feel for a little bit of hybrid coaching, which I'm going to talk about this conference. A little bit outside perspective of things, you know, being coaching in the U.S. for U.S. and Canada for that long and coming back. And now I've been back with the Federation for 9 years. And obviously we have had quite a bit of success in the Swedish national team programs, and I, you know, be fortunate to be part of that. So, you know, it's going to be fun to talk about a little bit of that journey in this conference.
You know, Rickard, about 3.5 weeks, pardon me, 2.5 weeks ago, you were on Draeger Cafe, and I watched it, and I wanted to ask you, is it tough to speak to Dregs, but you're not able to actually, you know, take a drink or have any food? And I was wondering, did Darren pick up the tab, or did you actually have to pay for your meal?
No, Darren was very polite. He actually picked up the tab. He invited me in there, so that wasn't a problem. We did have some little bit of a, I would say, appetizers with a coffee, and you know, yeah, it was really pleasant. It was nice to have a little chat with him.
Yeah, and obviously I was joking. I mean, it was a great interview. I watched it. It was about 10 minutes, and we want to talk to you about the World Hockey Championship. Obviously, Sweden winning the back-to-back gold medals, and obviously it didn't turn out how you wanted it to this year, losing to Finland in overtime in the quarterfinal. But can you just talk about this year's team versus the last couple of years and why it didn't work out for you? Obviously, you lost the game, but just, you know, your experience this past year in Slovakia.
Yeah, you know, when you're going into tournaments like this, it's not a, you know, best out of seven. It's not going in the regular season, 82 regular season game schedule. It's one game. It's the best out of three, I would usually say. You know, it's quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. And, you know, the last couple of years, we have the edge. We won 17 and 18, and in the finals, we actually won in the shootout. So, and this year we lost in overtime in quarterfinals, and you know, we were ahead 90 seconds left for a game when the Finns came back, and so the margins, and I know Canada was, I think it was 0.4 of a second, you know, scoring their goals in the quarterfinals against Swiss, so that kind of tells you that's more the differences between different years. I like the team we had on the ice. We had obviously quite a bit of talent on the ice. Like we have had the last 3 years of NHL players, helping out and doing a great job. But, sometimes, like I said, it's best out of one game.
Ricard, you signed a 2-year deal to coach the Lions in the Swiss League, but is there something, what do you feel when you hear that your name is in the mix for NHL head coaching vacancies? Because, there was rumors that you were in line for the Buffalo job. So what does that mean for you? You talked about a little bit of a, unusual path. So when you hear that your name is in the mix, what does that mean to you?
Obviously, like any other coach, you're always looking for challenges. And I think that the big challenge for me was being part of the national team for the last 12 seasons, actually, to coach a regular season team and coach over the course of a season. So I think that was the biggest thing that for myself to get used to go back to that. And when this Zurich offered me and approached me about this position, I thought it was obviously a top job in Europe. And a great opportunity for me to coach the players the course of all season. And like I said, like any other coaches, you always want to coach at the highest level, and NHL is the highest level. So I got to make sure we're doing a really good job in Zurich, and hopefully get an opportunity to get a chance in the National Hockey League.
Rickard Granberg is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Rickard is the men's head coach for the Swedish national team. He's also going to be a featured presenter at the upcoming 2019 Team Snap Hockey Coaches Conference taking place July 18th through 20th in Toronto. Rickard, along the same lines of Dave's question, it's been almost 20 years now since there was a head coach in the NHL from Europe. Last head coaches from Europe were Alpo Suhonen, a former Winnipeg Jets assistant coach, of course, and Ivan Hlinka. Why do you think it's almost been, two decades now since there's been a European head coach in the NHL?
This is a tough question to really answer. I think it's an opportunity of, if you look at the path of most coaches in the National Hockey League has a pretty clear path. I think, the more and more teams are looking outside the box now and hiring coaches. And I think, last year's hiring of Montgomery and Quinn and for the Rangers are obviously a little bit outside the box because they, they're coming from the college hockey, U.S. college hockey. So I think it's going to be more and more of management's looking outside the box when it comes to hiring people. That doesn't have to be exactly the path that most of the coaches have been taking so far. So I think that's one thing. I think the hockey world is getting a lot smaller as well. I think it's more of a, like I said, I'm considering myself as a hybrid coach where I have a lot of North American influences, obviously, and as well as European. I think that's a big strength. I think hockey world is a lot smaller that way. It's not a lot of unknowns when you go into World Cups or World Championships or Olympics. We know a lot about other programs and what they're doing, and obviously we're taking some of the best parts from other programs as well.
Rickard, you've coached at every single level with Team Sweden. You're talking World Junior Hockey Championships. We talked about the World Hockey Championship, but you're also talking about the World Cup of Hockey, but also the World Under 18s. And we know that the hockey world, as you mentioned, it's a small world, but it's always changing. And from your experience, and you've been coaching for decades now, when you coach some of these younger players, and you recently coached Rasmus Dahlin, but when you're talking about some of those younger Swedish prospects, what have you seen in the last, let's say, 3 to 5 years? When you're talking about some of these top end prospects, what's changed as far as maybe your approach to coaching these players?
Well, everyone's talking about communications. These guys growing up in this decade are more and more. They want more feedback. They want to, they live in a world of feedback. Whatever they're at in social media or any computer game or anything like that, they have constant feedback. And I think you as a coach needs to evolve and have interest in, what world are they living in order to be able to communicate with them. So I always try to update myself. What's going on in their lives. And I think the biggest question for coaches is to maybe ask some questions. Ask questions to the players. Ask people, ask questions about people they're working closest with. But mostly, be curious in their lives. And like I said, there's a lot different environment there that they're existing in right now than I did. You know, I'm born in the 60s, so obviously I'm coming from a little different background, a little different values probably. And, you know, if I have no interest in how, you know, how am I going to communicate with them, it's going to be tough for me to coach them.
You know, Ricard, everybody talks about the NHL being a copycat league, and then there's a tendency to just follow and play the same system as everybody else. But do you think there's an importance as a coach to playing to the strengths of the players that you have as opposed to that system?
Yeah, and also have ownership. Let the players have ownership the way we're playing. I usually ask the questions with the players. We sit down with the first meeting together and ask, okay, what are our strengths in our team? And, you know, obviously us coaches were involved in that discussion, and, you know, we're coming up with some points and okay, these are our strengths. Okay, how do we get the games into our strengths? I think that's the biggest biggest key for any team. You know, you need to look and assess your team. Okay, what are our strengths? And then, like I said, you know, try to get a big game plan that's gonna obviously get into our strengths. So I think you need to get the players on board on that.
To that point, Ricard, you know, you talk about how communication is key now for a head coach between communicating between himself and his players. How has it changed sort of from maybe a previous model that would have been more command and control as a head coach to more of a bilateral relationship between the two parties?
Well, I think it's a time and a place. I think there's a time and a place. There needs to be a general. There needs to be someone in charge. There needs to be someone making the decisions. I think until that point, you know, it needs to be, you know, I remember myself as a young coach going out in the ice with a whistle around my neck and, you know, I had answers to everything. I mean, the players coming up to me, I give them the answers, you know, and the older I get, the more I understand that there's a process. It's a process about everything. And I think the biggest issue or biggest key for a coach is to ask questions, ask the players, ask people around yourself. And I think if you as a head coach are open to look at other people's perspective, I think you got to have you're going to show a strength, not a weakness. But at the same time, I think it needs to be a place where, you know, everyone knows that you're in charge. You need to make sure that decision is being made, whatever that decision is, or what that idea came from. You need to be someone in charge, and I have no problems being that guy. But until that, I think you need to work with the people around yourself to make it a better situation for everyone, and especially share the ownership with everyone.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Ricard Granberg, the Swedish men's national team head coach. He's going to be appearing at the Team Snap Coaches Conference in Toronto, taking place July 18th through 20th.
And Ricard, you know, just quickly, final question here. The 2019 NHL draft is coming up in just under 2 weeks' time, and the top two prospects coming out of Sweden, big surprise, are defensemen, and you're talking about Victor Soderstrom and Philip Broberg. Just quickly, can you give us a bit of a scouting report on those two Swedish defensemen?
Well, like everyone else is asking me who they look like, you know, yeah. for NHL players. And, you know, I would probably say Soderstrom is more like an Erik Karlsson type, and Broberg is probably more like a Victor Hedman type. Broberg is a big, big, strong, great skater, you know, a guy that can move the puck, he sees the ice real well, and you know, makes solid decisions on the ice. And I think Soderstrom is more of a creative mind, a guy who's going to have a lot of wow things on the ice and do a little extra. So, and then right-hand shot. So, I mean, I think those guys are excellent example of guys you can compare to other superstars, Swedish defensemen.
The Team Snap Hockey Coaches Conference is going to take place in Toronto from July 18th through 20th. It brings together head coaches from across North America to learn more about coaching trends, strategies, and technologies. Ricard Granberg, Sweden's men's national team head coach, will be one of the presenters. Ricard, appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Ricard. If you want more information on the conference, we'll send out a link on our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. When we come back, we discuss the Stanley Cup final. The Blues have taken a 3-2 series lead after yet another officiating debacle in Game 5. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We talk about that up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I mean, a non-call on Achari. Their player's on his way to the box. I mean, they're the only. It's right in front of the official.
It's a slew foot. Our guy's gone. So the spotter took him out of the game for a possible concussion. I mean, it was blatant. It had a big effect on the game. I mean, this has happened. I mean, I'm a fan of the game. It's the National Hockey League getting a black eye with their officiating this playoffs. And here's another one's going to be talked about.
He's not wrong. That's Bruce Cassidy, Boston Bruins head coach, after Game 5, the controversial, to put it mildly, victory by the St. Louis Blues puts them one win away from hoisting Lord Stanley's Cup for the first time ever. Game 6, of course, goes tomorrow evening back in St. Louis, where they have a chance to win it on home ice. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show is brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon in the Cordon Village Mall.
Maybe we should start putting fortunes in the Illegal Curve Sandwich. What do you think of that?
I think the dead silence that I think the
idea of Ezzy touching anybody's food would be repulsive.
That's true, because he would eat it. Every sandwich would just come up with a
fortune. There would just be a fortune cookie.
No, Dave, yeah. I'm not going to put the fortunes, or maybe it's actually just a fortune cookie inside of the sandwich, so it's a little dessert after your sandwich. Even though if you've ever had the Illegal Curve sandwich, which I hope most of our listeners have tried it, you'd know that after you eat that sandwich, no dessert is required.
No, you're pretty...
You just go for a nap right after.
Yeah, adding dessert to that would be pretty gluttonous, I want to say. So I think the sandwich is pretty good as is. I would say it's even more than pretty good. So leave that a status quo and go back to the drawing board with your ideas there, you mad scientist. Let's talk about Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals, of course. It was a 2-1 victory for the St. Louis Blues, but really the thing that everyone's talking about isn't the fact that Zdeno Chara played the game with a broken jaw. It's David Perron's goal to make it 2-0 seconds after a blatant, and I mean blatant, Tyler Bozak trip/slew foot goes uncalled.
No, it was a Russian leg sweep.
It was a Russian leg sweep. Yeah. You're right. A la Bret Hart back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, the official's right there. You see Bozak after he perpetrates the act, turn around at the official and plead innocence. I mean, anytime you see the player basically try and beg for forgiveness, it's a penalty.
Yeah, and I hate that it was Tyler Bozak, because I've always liked Bozak and he's had a really good playoffs, but I know you want to get into, the officiating as a whole in the playoffs and how it happens to affect...
You heard what Bruce Cassidy said. It's another black eye on the league. It's a 1-0 game at that point, and then the Blues make it 2-0 on a bang-bang. I mean, it's not a good goal, but it's a goal nonetheless, and it proves to be the game-winning goal. So the NHL... You would think that they'd be embarrassed, but they don't seem to ever show any sign of embarrassment.
Well, I don't necessarily think that I don't think you can blame the overarching NHL here, Drew. I mean, the refs missed the call. To me, I realize maybe,
if it was one call in the playoffs, I wouldn't blame the NHL, but it's one call in almost every single series. Right. So I have to believe that there is something culturally wrong with officiating at the NHL level right now.
I don't even know if it's cultural. I think it's just the way the rules are interpreted or the fact that less penalties are called. But I wanted to say something here because...
From my perspective, and I apologize for interrupting, the only reason the officials didn't call a penalty in that instance is because however many minutes previously, the Blues had been whistled for a penalty. So the officials referee the entire 60 minutes of the game, and rather than looking at infraction by infraction, they're worried about, did we call too many penalties, justified or not, 2 periods ago.
But we know that the NHL doesn't call the game based on how the game, the play goes. It is a lot like that, especially in the playoffs. I think that's Ezzy's point, is that you're not used, you're not going to see the same game that you would watch in the regular season in the playoffs. Why there's that lack of inconsistency, because the whole point we know is that players will have to adapt. So if you're going to call the game tight in the playoffs, players will adapt and they're not going to do things. And if they do and they know it's going to get a call, then they're not going to do it because it's so critical if you get a penalty against you. So I think the whole point is you can't have the officials be quote afraid to be, if it's a penalty, it's a penalty in the regular season. I want it called in the playoffs. I don't care that you quote eat your whistle during the playoffs. I think it's idiotic. I think call it because the players play it for 82 games. Why should it be any different for the remaining however many games you play in the playoffs.
Sure. At game 82, a ticky-tack call is still made.
That's right.
Just because it's game one of the playoffs, that same ticky-tack call isn't made. And if it would be fine if it was completely across the board consistent, but if that had been the first period, if that had been the first minute of the first period, that penalty is called on Tyler Bozak.
Well, speaking of earlier in the game, to me the story that's getting buried here is Ivan Barbashev, that non-call, the high hit on Marcus Johansson, he's going to miss game seven.
Got suspended for one game.
Right?
Game six.
Sorry, game six is what I meant to say. And Barbashev has been actually very effective. We talked about the fourth line, and you know, Barbashev's a very physical player. I don't think a lot of people knew about Barbashev before the Stanley Cup playoffs. He hasn't been, you know, a top six forward.
It's not a household name.
But they're going to miss him. And we know, you know, physicality has been a big part of the Blues game. You're talking about Sammy Blais. You're talking about Pat Maroon, Robert Bortuzzo. So I think that missed call bothers me more, Drew. And I realize the missed call on Bozak is the one that we're talking about because it had a direct impact on the winning goal.
It gave the Blues, in that brief window, it gave them a power play. Because the defenseman for the Bruins is basically out cold on the ice, because he hit the back of his head, so he's out of the play. And it, you know, it's not like they were able to set up a power play structure, but the Bruins player is out of the play. The Blues player is still in the play, despite the fact he should be penalized, and the puck ends up in the back of the net. And no, so
it was one of those egregious missed calls, just like, you know, the hand pass. Yeah. That was an egregious missed call. And then when we talked about, you know, the first round with the Cody Eakin 5-minute major that should have been a minor, and you know, the Sharks most likely don't go to the second round, and the Golden Knights are in the second round, right, guys? So, I mean, that's the issue that I think we all have. And I think I speak for, you know, all hockey fans when I say this. I mean, these mishaps, if you want to call them, these non-calls or the wrong calls, they are determining the outcomes of too many games. It used to be, and that's why I hate talking about it. Like, I want to talk about the fact that Zdeno Chara
played with a broken jaw.
Like, he's tough as nails, and even if Boston doesn't win game six, and by the way, I do think Boston's going to win game six.
You think this goes back?
I think it goes back. I have no idea who's going to win the series. I still think Boston's in it. I wouldn't write them off. I mean, let's not forget.
Well, it's one game. You can't write them off.
Guys, let's not forget. I mean, since we were on last week, there have been three games. Boston won game three, 7-2.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, I think everybody thinks momentum's going to carry over. Hey, I could be eating my shorts here. St. Louis could win it in six, guys. But I think with the way Game 5 ended...
Are you putting a fortune cookie in those shorts before you
eat
them?
Yeah, I'm going to put a fortune cookie in there. But I'm just saying, the Bruins are here for a reason. They're a good team. I just wouldn't count them out. When you're desperate, we know what that can bring out.
Of course, they're...
That's all I'm saying, Drew. I wish we were talking more about, you know, the accomplishments of how good Jordan Binnington was.
Absolutely.
I mean, the Blues were being outshot 11-2 in the first period. He stopped 17 shots. I think we should be talking more about that, how well Ryan O'Reilly has been playing. I don't want to talk about the reffing anymore.
Well, you're absolutely right, Ezzy, but the NHL has brought this upon themselves with how poor... I mean, all due respect to Stephen Walkham, I remember back Jets 1.0 when Stephen Walkham was a young official in the NHL, and there was a game. It still sticks out in my mind. I don't remember if it was the last Jets season or the second last Jets 1.0 season, but Walkham was the official, and it was the worst officiated game I've ever seen. I can still vividly remember how bad it was. The game ended, the Jets lost in overtime because the pinnacle of it was there was a two-hand slash on the Jets defenseman. It shattered his stick. And I don't remember what team they were playing, but they came out and they ended up scoring an overtime winner. And it was the icing on the cake of how bad of a job Stephen Walkham did in that one game. And he's in charge of NHL officiating right now. So from my perspective, in the offseason, once the offseason starts, and you only got really, you know, 2 months to get it underway, there needs to be an officiating summit. You need to figure out what is rotten with NHL officiating. And I don't think it's that the refs are bad, but I think it's culturally they've been beaten down so much that they don't know how to call a game anymore because the hires up at the NHL have screwed them up so badly.
I really think it goes back to the point I made earlier, which is just call the games the same way you call in the regular. Like, you're a professional referee. Call the games the same way. The players will adapt. It may not be, quote, as much fun, although these playoffs haven't been very good, so maybe it'll be better. It'll make for better hockey, and maybe the winners will actually be the teams that should win. Mm-hmm. Although I hate when teams bellyache. I mean, he didn't score for, 43 minutes in the game, and suddenly that one play isolation. Obviously, it gave the Blues a 2-0 lead, but still, there was plenty of time with which, you know, and to Ezzy's point, Binnington was unbelievable, and he held them in, right? So, I mean, the fact is, you didn't score prior to that play. But anyways, the point is, if you allow the refs to call the games the way they're used to calling them, as opposed to having to adjust in their minds, and I'm not saying that the NHL is giving them a directive, put away your whistle. But it just seems to be culturally, to your point, that there's this mentality we need to change and put the weight of the whistle, call something that's egregious. But again, sometimes you don't want to call something that just happened after another call.
Yeah.
So
they're too afraid to call back-to-back penalties.
So I think from that perspective, you know, just allow them to call the games, allow the players to adjust to the games being called the way they played the full regular season. And guess what? You'll probably have a lot better results and a lot less complaining and a lot less discussions about referees.
When we come back, Amy Marks Course covers the St. Louis Blues for KMOX Radio in St. Louis. She joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.